third hour, Darren Dunnick and Chase here on this Tuesday afternoon. ESPN 102.5, The Game. We'll just kind of wait for John Hines to talk from Raleigh after practice. That's coming up here shortly. All you have to do is, by the way, go to thegamenashville.com to check out Nashville's best deals this week. Buy one, get one free tickets to Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon. The weather is warming up, getting warmer temps. Look into that. Beach Bend Park is your ticket to summer fun, and double your savings with BOGO admission. Two parks, two tickets for the price of one. Get yours now at thegamenashville.com. Summer is just around the corner, guys. Keep that in mind.
Yes, this week.
Yes.
If you look at the temperatures.
I know. You're right. This week is right. Something we haven't talked about, I think we need to talk about a little bit more until John Hines starts speaking, and then we will cut into that live. The Predators are going to have to do a better job of making Alex Nedeljkovic work a little bit harder. I didn't think they made him work. Remember, he's a rookie goalie. I thought at times he looked a little bit shaky, and I don't think that they applied enough pressure to him. It's a great story. This is a guy that was put on waivers at the beginning of the season. I mean, anybody in the league could have had him. He's put on waivers and cleared waivers.
That is pretty crazy to think about.
And now he's starting right. He just started game one and won game one in the postseason. And he was put on waivers at the beginning of the year, and nobody claimed him. And so I do think that they're going to have to – now he'll probably, now that he's got a game under his belt, adjust to the jitters will be a little bit less, and he'll probably be a little bit better. But I think the Predators can do a better job in game two tomorrow night of making him a little bit more uncomfortable. Anybody disagree with that?
Not in the least. I think you're dead on. But I think what it illustrates is how good Carolina plays team defense in front of him. One of the things that jumped out at me when you guys had the discussion with Mike Kelly, I guess it's been a week and a half ago or so, about the Vezina. And he was talking about the numbers. If you look at save percentage and goals against average, Alex Nedeljkovic is unbelievable. He's got numbers that are right up there with any goalie. But he said, if you take a closer look and you look at the difficulty of shots that he faces as opposed to what UC Soros has faced, it's no comparison because Carolina is so good defensively. And I think last night was a good example. He played fine, right? But I think, you know, if Nashville could get more, they've got to find a way to get a few more chances. It's going to be hard against Carolina. They're that good. But they've got to find a way to get more, which is why the power play, I think, and you could hear it with David Poile. You know, he's sort of implying, hey, we've got to get more from the power play. And with that, there's I'm sure, a large discussion about Eli Tolvanen being part of the equation. Of course, they got to get set up.
Yeah.
Right? But more heat on the goalie, it's got to happen, right? If they're going to win this series, they've got to get more than they got last night. About halfway through the game, when Eric Halla ties the game up, at that point you're thinking, okay, they're hanging. They're getting enough chances here. But in the second half of the game, not enough. Not enough.
Let's do this. Matthias Ekholm is talking right now before John Hines. So let's just check in and hear what blue liner Matthias Ekholm was saying.
I think one big part of it is obviously you see the small details of every little bounce, every little battle. If you relax for just that split second, it can end up in the back of your net. And you know that every goal in the playoffs, especially, is huge. So I think it's more of always being aware. You can't just take a second off or just leave your guy for just a split second. You always have to be on your game and just be aware at all times when you're in the D zone, especially. So it's just, you know, every game is huge. Every moment is huge out there. It's just like the awareness of when you're out there that you know that if you just relax for a little bit here, that could be the game winning goal going not your way. So I think it's the mental part of it of always being aware out there and not giving them anything and also respect those little moments out there that they can make a huge difference in the end.
Robbie Stanley.
Yeah, Matthias, obviously Carolina very good on the forecheck as a defenseman. Like, what's the key to breaking through that was as aggressive as they are on the forecheck?
I think we have a pretty good plan for it. We just got to execute it maybe a little bit better than we did last night. We know they're a fast team. They're not overly obviously, they were hitting a little bit last night, but I feel like they're not maybe that heavy. Like you play Dallas, you know you're going to get hit every time. Here, it's more of a mindset of going back, being first back to pucks and not making sure they're not first on them when we come back, when they dump them in. So I think us maybe reading the plays a little earlier, seeing when they dump it and to be able to come back and be first, get first touch, and that would set us up better to do what we want to do when they're coming with their aggressive forecheck.
Paul Scrubina.
Hi, Matthias. Just curious, the last couple months you guys have kind of, you know, ramped up your game, you know, to get to this point. Is there another level do you feel like that you need to get to in order to keep that momentum going?
Yeah, I obviously you can just go off of one game here in the playoffs, and I think we have another level than we showed last night. I think we were close to it in the first. I thought we weared off maybe a little bit in the second, but still okay. I mean, and then 2-2 on the road in the playoffs going into third was good. Obviously, we know we need to be better than we were in the third. I think there's, as you're saying, I think there's another level to it, but so far I think the first period was most or the closest to where we want to be. And I think for sure, as you're saying, there's more to it, and then there's another level that we can get to, and we're preparing for us to show that tomorrow.
Brooks?
Matthias, as you just said, and your teammates mentioned last night, the sentiment seemed to be we're going 2-2 into the third, and we didn't like our third period. How much is there to build on from that first 40 minutes from last night?
I think it's a lot. I think especially when you look at the first, I know everyone, you know, you have kind of like a week off here and come into a big playoff game. It's kind of some nerves and all that you got to get out. And I think that's on both sides. But at the same time, I thought we handled the first period really well and we got to our game. And I think even when they came with their forecheck, I thought we solved it pretty good. And I think we did it to the way that we want to play. So obviously you see, if you look at that first 20, that's where we got to get to. And also we see, conversely, you see in the third where we kind of need to be better. So there's, as I said, lessons to be learned, but at the same time, we're not trying to get too low or get too high here. So we know what we have to do, and we just got to go out tomorrow and execute it.
Do we have any other questions for Matthias? All right. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll, let you get back to that raucous soccer game going on behind us here.
There we go. So there was defenseman Matthias Ekholm. John Hines probably is going to take to the podium here in just a second.
I want to know more about the soccer game. Come on.
Yeah. Well, we've got a show to do. We can't do the soccer game. We should have our own soccer game going here. I guess we can't do that.
We're in separate rooms. You think I could participate in that? Like, really?
You can participate. Absolutely.
Can I ask a question,
Go ahead.
Chase?
Go ahead.
Robbie Stanley from Robbie and Rex Road, he's half of Robbie and Rex Road. He is throwing out the first pitch tonight.
Yes, he is.
At First Horizon Park.
Is he wearing the tiche?
I don't know. That's actually a really good question.
He's got to sport the tiche.
I don't know. Willie, that's an excellent question. I don't know. That needs to be broached.
Need to get that information before the end of our show.
We do.
Yeah.
It was brought to my attention last night that, you know, I was asked if I wanted to do it, and we've got I've done it before, and I don't think I've done it at Greer and at First Horizon. It's memorable. I absolutely love it. I would have been honored to do it tonight, but we've got baseball practice, and it was brought to my attention, like, should Chase be asked to do this? Were you asked to do this at all?
I was not.
Would you have accepted?
Of course I would have. And I actually came in this morning, and I told you I was feisty. I came in this morning, and I looked at Ryan Porth, and I said, if I do not do this year, it's you that I'm coming after. Because I want to go viral. I want to be in the not top 10 on SportsCenter. Like,
like, you want to be mayor of Cincinnati.
I want to be 50 Cent. Yeah. Well, I want to be – Paul Jones did it a few years ago from formerly of Fox 17. It was bad.
It was bad. It was really – yours would be probably worse.
But I said to him, I said, what would you – like, honest question. What would you do if I got up there and I just threw one right down Broadway?
We would – we would know it's not you. We would go start trying to unzip the costume. We would know that it's not you.
Chase gets tested for HGH.
The Scooby-Doo.
Chase, I'm not saying anything you don't know. We can laugh about this together, okay? It took you years in Gatlinburg just to throw onto a cornhole board. You think you're going to fire it from the mound, a strike into home plate? Like, that's not going to happen, right?
You can throw a grenade in there.
You never know.
You couldn't.
You never know.
If the ball explodes, then maybe a piece goes to home plate, but come on.
If I do that,
60 feet, just toss it, just a toss. I'm not talking about a heater.
If I throw a strike, for one day we are rebranding 102.5 The Chase, and I make all the decisions.
I think that's the deal. That's fair. This has to happen.
I don't think anybody would be scared by that deal. Why do you think? Now you feel frisky, so frisky. You think you're going to throw a strike?
No, I'm just saying, what if? but again, you broached the subject, and this was never even brought up to me, which doesn't surprise me at all. Like,
well, but I mean, there's nothing wrong with Robbie's never. I don't think Robbie's ever done this.
No,
before,
Robbie will be great. That's fine.
Have you done this?
No. Okay. And it's kind of like, I would love to do this.
Well, Chase, there's a long season, okay? It's a long ways to go. I'm sure that we could make this happen.
No, but okay? I know what this is going to be. This is going to, you know, it's going to be the typical last kid picked. You know, they're going to ask everybody else, and then nobody else is going to be able to do it. And like, hey, Chase, are you available? Could you make time in your schedule to do this? Like, that's what it's going to be, because that's what it always is.
Somebody's a little... We got a little red butt, don't they? We've hit a nerve.
Chase, I just think you need to focus on the job that you need to do when that time comes.
Hey, I'm going to be ready.
I think you can do it.
Bad case of red butt. Whew.
I'm going to work with
you,
Chase.
Can you do pregame?
If you need it.
Can you do Preds Insiders? Yeah, whatever. It's fine. I'm always here. Always ready to say yes. You know where to find me.
It's the first one of the season. I think you're going to be all right.
No, I know.
It's all right.
When you get the call, when they call your number, we're going to have a throwing session. So you're going to be prepared for this.
Nobody gets throwing sessions
before you
do this.
Dean, I remember Mayor Carl Dean, he used to get out and throw on the side before you go out to the mound. That's a smart thing to do. You play a little catch beforehand.
Really?
Yeah, you loosen up the arm.
Well, I understand that, but that's what he did?
Oh, yeah.
I never did that.
I did. I did it out of New York.
I'm going to go to, there's going to be a bullpen session.
Yeah. We'll throw a pen.
If I get asked to do this, there will be a bullpen session.
And if we have to do it, you know, before you go to the park so nobody sees, right, that's fine too. We're going to find a workout area.
Yes.
It will happen. And it'll be glorious.
Oh, it'll be amazing.
From the rubber to the plate.
No, now wait a minute. That's not how they. Sometimes I've experienced both. And
I know, but I think if you want the full Monty, you got to go from the rubber.
They usually give you the choice.
Sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's like you can, and sometimes it's like no, you're doing it in front of the mound.
I'll be ready for both.
If he does it from the mound, I feel very confident it's going to go viral. I feel very good about that.
Would you take it, or let me ask this. If you're me, should I take it as a victory if I throw from the mound and I one-hop it in?
No. It cannot have a hop. You cannot bounce it up there.
Okay.
It's like Derek Jeter told President Bush for the World Series in 2001. He had the bulletproof vest on, right? This is after 9/11. And he had the thick Yankees jacket on, and he was throwing underneath Yankee Stadium, warming up, and Derek Jeter walked up to him, and he said, "You ready?" And President Bush said, "I'm a little nervous. You know, I'm trying to get loose." He goes, "You know, if you bounce it, they'll boo you."
Yeah, he's right. Listen, when Derek did it, it wasn't great.
No, it was not, actually. It was not.
I have that video.
You're talking about D-Mace?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not great. It was not his most athletic moment.
Keith said, "I would expect it to go right down Broadway." He probably means that it would be off target that it would
go literally down Broadway. Like, I agree with that. Like, literally, I could see it going down Broadway.
You'd have to have a pretty good arm to get it to Broadway from.
Well, it would probably hit a bus and, you know, stick on there, and the bus would take it a couple blocks. It falls off, rolls down a street, you know, that's, you know, not.
There would be a sell. Another text on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com. There would be a sellout just to see Chase attempt to throw out the first pitch.
This is why we got to practice, Chase. We're going to do this. I got to do some throwing for my shoulder, too. I got to get my shoulder back in shape. So this is a great win-win situation.
Where are we?
I'm getting there. I'm now 5 months removed, feeling pretty good. There's still a little stiffness. It's not full tilt, but I'm cleared. Clear to throw.
You're clear to throw.
Yeah, I'm throwing a little bit. I don't have the full max fastball back. Not that I ever had it, but
Max has a fastball. I didn't know that.
Max Scherzer has a fastball.
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does. What about Max Herz?
I haven't seen his fastball.
I don't know,
but I need to throw more.
I gotta
start ramping up. Get the arm back to being able to long toss a little bit here.
Kevin says, can we start from the beginning? Chase can't land a beanbag on the cornhole platform. I can now.
See, with practice,
that story has been told many times. It took several trips to Gatlinburg before you could throw the bags on the board. Forget holding it. On the board.
It's true.
True, right?
It's true.
Like, I'm not saying anything. You know, we're on this trip together.
You're spitting
so,
facts.
Right. But now you've come a long ways, and now you're holing them.
Eric says it's bad baseball etiquette to do a first pitch from the rubber.
I disagree with that.
Well, I'm just telling you, in my experiences in the past, sometimes they've been cool, and sometimes it's like, hey, I need you to do it in front of the mound.
Yeah,
I need you to do it out there in front.
Yeah,
so
sometimes they're a little
I've had
groundskeepers. They want the mound pure when the pitcher goes out there. Yep.
So I've done them for both. But Robbie will do great tonight. He will do great.
He'll do awesome.
But we do need to find out what he's wearing.
He's got to wear the Vibrant shirt. He's got to do it.
He's got to. So look, we need to find out for sure if he's doing that. By the way, what are we doing? No John Hines yet?
Not yet, currently.
Okay, so let's do this. Willie, why don't you tell everybody about the good folks at Lee Company, and we'll come back and probably should be pretty close to the head coach talking.
All right, we will hear from John Hines when he does his press conference between games 1 and 2 here shortly. In the meantime, I will tell you about a big sponsor of our Nashville Predators hockey coverage, that is Lee Company. And I tell you all the time about their home maintenance plan, which means year-round checkups with your air conditioning, heating, plumbing, and electrical systems. That is the home maintenance plan from Lee Company. They will schedule appointments, they will follow up, and they will give you discounts on repairs when needed. And over time, if you're a homeowner, you know that eventually you're going to have some tune-ups on your air conditioning system, etc. But that is where you stay on top of things. You find little things before they become big problems, and you save money over the long term with the home maintenance plan. That's how it works for Lee Company. We use it ourselves here in the Donick residence. 615-567-1000 for Lee Company or leecompany.com online. Lee Company is a proud sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
We're going to give you a chance before we get out of here. In fact, we're going to have Ryan McGee coming up here very shortly. We'll have to play John Hines a little bit later in the show, but we'll give you an opportunity maybe after talking with Ryan to get you a pair of tickets to see the Tennessee Lottery 250, the Xfinity race, which will be at the Nashville Super Speedway on Saturday, June 19th. Remember, that's a big Father's Day weekend. We've got the truck race Friday night. You've got the Xfinity race on Saturday and the Cup race on Sunday. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Tuesday. Don't forget game 2 tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. That'll be the puck drop. Everything will be heard right here on 102.5 The Game. P. Weber and Hal Gill will have your call when they drop the puck. I'll have pregame for you an hour prior. And then a Friday, remember, speaking of an hour prior, it's going to be an hour earlier than normal. So 6 o'clock puck drop on Friday night at Bridgestone Arena, pregame at 5, and then Sunday, it has been announced, Game 4 will be at 1:30 in the afternoon. So we'll see if the Predators can even this thing up at 1 after falling 5-2 last night, and they'll have their work cut out. But, you know, the big thing, and that's probably why John Hines is maybe a little bit delayed at probably trying to figure out how they're going to address the questions, because he knows it's coming about lineup changes. David Poile did discuss a little bit of that with us and really didn't run from the subject and said there may be an adjustment or two with the lineup. I think that's kind of goes without saying. Whenever you lose game one, that typically happens in the playoffs, especially when you've got so many bodies readily available to you. So we'll have to wait and see what those changes are. I think the most obvious, in my opinion, is what we've been talking about so far on the show, is the power play. Three cracks at it last night. Pretty much Carolina gets a lot of credit for it, but it was pretty inept last night. Really unable to get anything going. So you do wonder if that will equal Tolvanen in the lineup for game two.
We tracked our statistician, Jay Levin. He had one chance that Nashville really got. And that was even, he even said, you know, sort of a generous way of looking at it. It's not always the shots you get. It's, you know, what kind of action do you get? Do you get set? Do you have guys in the right positions? Are you a threat? And they really didn't threaten very much last night. They had sort of an out-of-nowhere backdoor pass. Philip Forsberg had Mikhail Granlund on the backside. Difficult finish, and the puck, you know, didn't bounce his way. They didn't really get a shot out of it. But by and large, they did not threaten. You heard David Poile say that. The other thing that jumped out at me, David Poile and Mattias Ekholm echoed what we discussed when we just first started giving our assessment of the show, of the game last night, the start of the show. They said, you know, played pretty well, but pretty well isn't good enough to beat Carolina, especially at Carolina. And I like the example that Mattias Ekholm used. He said, you know, you can be playing really well for a large segment of the game, but the minute you let your guard down one time against that team, they're good enough to make you pay. And I think that's a, you know, the 4-on-4 goal might be an example, right? Predators are about to go on the power play. In your mind, you're thinking, okay, how are we going to score on this power play? But there's 11 seconds left, and then all of a sudden, boom, Jordan Staal makes a great play. Beginning of the third period, you're just entering in. Okay, it's a 2-2 game. How are we going to find a way to get ahead? And there's a little bit of a breakdown. Boom. And it's 3-2. They just can't, they don't have that margin for error, and they know it, right? And they've played so well for, you know, the last month and a half. They understand the level they have to get to be competitive against teams like Carolina. That was the issue before, right? They were 1-11-1 against Carolina, Tampa, and Florida. Those teams were just pummeling them before they figured out how they had to play. And they were much more competitive down the stretch. But they weren't at that level last night.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, Darren, about, you know, more presence in front of the net. They're re-showing the game on NHL Network. Mm-hmm. At about the 10:30 mark in the second period, there was Cunnan was parked in front of the net, and there was a really good chance, but nobody else was around him. You know, it's more than getting one guy to the net. It's the one thing that I've noticed about this team is they'll get the initial shot, the rebound will come out, and then there's nobody there to pick up the rebound. And that's what Carolina did so well. They scored on – they would get the initial shot on Saros. Saros would make the save. They're showing one right now on the fourth goal that Carolina scored. Puck goes back around the net, and then they have somebody there to clean it up. And that's what the Predators have to do a better job of, whether it's 5-on-5 or on the power play. It's just, you know, you get so much with traffic in front of the net on the initial shot and on the rebound as well, and that's just something they've struggled with.
I think they have made vast improvements in that part of their game. The Herd line has had a lot of goals like that. I think Cunnan has been really good in that area. Granlund has. But you're right, Chase, last night, not enough of it. There's got to be that second layer. And you just need more of a sustained attack to get that second effort, right? It can't just be, well, we got down here, let's fire one on net with nobody in front just to say we have a shot. But that's what Carolina does. They're so good. They can do this to everybody. It's not just the Predators. They can shut down good teams for long stretches where you're like, we haven't had a shot in how long? Boy, it doesn't seem like we've had the puck very much. That's why you have to be so sharp with your game. You heard Mattias Ekholm say, I think we have a good plan to attack their forecheck, to deal with their forecheck, but we have to make sure we execute every time. We've got to be quick. We've got to be sharp. That's how you get the puck up the ice and you can get some chances against them. But it's hard. They make you work.
Well, they went probably the first half of the second period with no shots.
Right. I thought that was an interesting part of the game. You know, early in the second period, Carolina comes out strong. You know, they get the 4-on-4 goal, they forge ahead, but then Nashville fights back, right? They tie it up and they go on a stretch of 5 or 6 minutes where they control the play. But that's where it started to tip towards Carolina down the stretch of the second period and then into the third. That's where Nashville just could not answer back. Maybe it was a little too much of they had to fight really hard to kill off the power plays. And maybe that sapped them a little bit. You heard David Poile say there was so much 4-on-4, 5-on-4, you know, 4-on-4 that turned into a 5-on-4, that sort of disrupted some of the flow of the lines that they wanted to put out there. That takes away some energy.
I think we've got Ryan McGee on the line with us, our buddy. We always enjoy our chats with him. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm having a weird day. I just got off the phone with Frank Viola.
Oh, really?
Wow,
tell us about
how.
I'm a
Met fan, Ryan. I just perked up. My day just got better. Let me hear this.
All right. Well, then you'll really like what I'm working on. So Friday is the 40th anniversary of what many consider to be the greatest college baseball game ever played. And it was 1981, May 21st, and it was Yale versus St. John's in the NCAA baseball tournament. And it was Ron Darling, speaking of the Mets,
woo,
versus Frank Viola.
Wow.
And nobody really heard either one of them. And Ron Darling no-hit St. John's for 11 and a third innings and struck out 16 and lost.
Wow.
And Frank Viola was the winning pitcher in the game. And I just found out I live in Charlotte. I just found out Frank Viola lives in Charlotte, which I did not know till I talked to him on the phone. So there you go.
I cannot wait for this piece to come out.
How did he end up in Charlotte?
Those guys.
So, all right. So Frank Viola's daughter played volleyball at Winthrop University, which is just south of Charlotte in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And now she is like a volleyball coach at Davidson College, which y'all know Davidson from Steph Curry and all that.
Sure.
So Frank lives here to be near his grandkids and his children. And he is a pitching coach for an independent minor league team. I mean, I'm like, okay. But, you know, I asked him, I said, what's it like living in Braves territory, you know, as the hero of the 1987 heartbreaking World Series for Braves fans? And he said he just keeps that to himself. So,
yeah. Chase, do you remember Frank Viola? You remember him as a Braves fan? Remember him?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. By the way, he was a smooth lefty.
We're at that age now where, like, the other day I was filling in for Paul Feinbaum not too long ago, and I said something about Willie McGee, like my cousin Willie McGee, and I could see the 20-something-year-old producer, like, scrambling to Google. Like,
that's so sad, but so true.
Suddenly I realized. It's like all my pop culture references and my sports references are getting dated.
Oh, man. So that's a bad feeling.
So sad. You know what? Real quick, because this is not why we brought you on, but this is perfect to ask you this, because this is along the same lines. You know, being here in Nashville every time, you know, whether it's Oakland or Tampa or expansion, MLB, you know, in a new market, Nashville gets named, right? Well, Charlotte is another one. Like, how serious is Charlotte as a possible MLB city for the future?
I'm a season ticket holder of the Charlotte Knights, right? We're a AAA city just like Nashville is. I kind of like that. Like, I'm going to Indianapolis next week for the 500. Indianapolis has been a AAA city forever. I just think, but obviously they have the Pacers and the Colts. I mean, Nashville, Indy, and Charlotte have always, to me, reminded me of each other. And so I'm not saying that Charlotte couldn't support a major league team, but I just don't know if Charlotte's ready to host 80 something sporting events a summer, you know? Now back in the day, the Charlotte Knights used to have, I mentioned Rock Hill, Winthrop, they used to have a ballpark, actually wasn't in Charlotte. It was in South Carolina, just south of Charlotte, and out in the suburbs, and George Shinn, who owned the Hornets, he built that ballpark, and you could tell when you went, that was built for expansion. Like, that ballpark sat 10,000 people, and you know, they could have easily expanded it to 40 if they wanted to. You could tell the way it was built. And so the thought has always been there, but if I'm – and I'm a huge baseball guy, but if I'm being 100% honest, I kind of dig being a Triple-A city. And there's no question to me Nashville could support it. It would be like it was for us as kids. You know, you go to a Braves game back in the 80s, and – the crowd would be, you know, it'd be a third locals, and the rest of it would be people who come in on buses from South Carolina and North Carolina and, you know, Alabama and all these other places. So for Nashville or Charlotte to make it work, it would have to be a really regional thing, not just in the city.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ryan brings up Willie McGee. He was a Nashville Sound.
He was a Nashville Sound. Yep.
I was never like a Cardinals fan or any of that stuff, but that's the one piece of Cardinals memorabilia I have. I pay way too much for one of those powder blue Cooperstown classic Willie McGee jerseys because it says McGee on the back.
Very nice. We had Josh Heupel on here just recently, and we asked him about the transfer portal. And of course, usually you have to buckle up because you never know what a coach is going to tell you about the transfer portal. We've talked about it a bunch on this show. What are your overall thoughts on where this is now? It's not where it's going. It's where it is today. Where, I mean, hell, you can't even keep up with it, right? Who's in it and where you have to. I mean, you could probably spend, you could dedicate a show just trying to see where every kid has gone and landed and transferred to and who's in there. But overall, what do you think about it, Ryan?
Well, it's just the wild, wild west, and what. The part of it that drives me crazy is when the coaches complain about it, or the coaches, you know, have, you know, it's the Wild Wild West and we can't keep track. They wrote the rules. You know, this thing was created by them. And a lot of coaches saw this as a short-term fix for some problems. And certainly if you are the head coach at Georgia or Alabama or Texas or wherever, you're thinking, well, everybody's going to transfer to my place. And so the rules were written loose on purpose. And I just don't think they understood the monster they were creating. And now they can't put a lid on it. Now, the reality is that the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Texas, whoever, they still benefit from it. But it's just keeping track of it. You're right. I mean, listen, at ESPN.com, every Thursday, we have our writer's Zoom, right? It's me and it's Heather Dinich and it's Chris Lowe and it's Slayball and it's Adam Rindberg and I mean everybody you've ever heard of and a lot of editors you haven't. And we all, if someone mentions the transfer portal, it blows the call up because we spend the next 45 minutes trying to figure it out. And so to me that just kind of sums it up, which is you just handle it the best you can until they try to kind of put the lid on it. But what I worry about is the group you didn't mention, which is there's the kids that are leaving, and then there's the kids that are going somewhere, and you're trying to recruit those guys. But there's a lot of these guys are going nowhere. And that goes to the high school recruits. I mean, they're talking about, in the state of Texas, they're talking about colleges giving out like half as many scholarships to high school kids as they did 2 years ago because they're holding on to that money and one of those roster spots for transfers. And so there's a rollover problem here that I don't think we can fully comprehend yet. And to me, that's the story. The story, the long-term story when we look back 20 years from now is going to be all the kids that got screwed because they were convinced that the transfer portal was the right move for them and they landed nowhere, or the transfer portal cut them off when, you know, they thought they had a chance to come out of high school and go play college football somewhere.
What's realistic for Josh Heupel and UT this season? Like, what should be a building block? Everybody feels good about the direction it's headed. What's the realistic number? Wins?
All right, now you sound like all my in-laws and my college roommates. You know, folks that don't know, I went to UT, and so these are the conversations I have, you know, casually around the fire pit right now. And what I have told them all. And man, I feel like I'm saying that I've said this every year for the last 16 years, but you need to root for a winning record and a bowl berth. That's what you need to root for. You don't need to root for 11 wins, and you don't need to root for the college football playoff, and you don't even need to root for, you know, a New Year's Day game. You need to root for a postseason football game. You know, I live here in Charlotte. We will gladly welcome you to whatever we're calling the Boat Bowl now. That'd be great. And so to me, that's what the goal needs to be. The goal needs to be head above water, postseason game, and try to get, you know, and again, for the upteenth time I'm saying this, try to get some sort of foundation / springboard built so that you can try to be something better 4 years from now.
Talking to Ryan McGee from ESPN. Ryan, another regional question for you. We always seem to bounce all around the map with you, which is fun. You know, you've got the Carolina Hurricanes over in Raleigh playing the Nashville Predators in the NHL playoffs right now. I'm just curious, from where you sit, I know Charlotte's not next door to Raleigh or anything like that, but, you know, with it being the Carolina Hurricanes, they're a really good team. They've started to build the last couple of years more attention. What kind of attention do they get in Charlotte?
It's the NASCAR series.
Well, it's interesting because I grew up in Raleigh, but I've lived in Charlotte now for 20-plus years. And when you grow up in Raleigh, they teach you that Charlotte is evil. And when you live in Charlotte, they say, well, don't go to Raleigh, because all they do in Raleigh, that's where the state legislature votes to build roads in Raleigh, and they won't fix the streetlights in Charlotte. So there's always been – every state kind of has the one city and then the rest of the state. And Charlotte has always kind of had this, for whatever reason, kind of standoffish thing with Raleigh. And it's funny because, you know, I go to Raleigh and there's not, people don't go crazy for the Panthers because they don't feel like that's their team. And you're in Charlotte and people, they root for the Hurricanes fine, but they don't live and die by the Hurricanes in Charlotte. So there's always been, you know, from my driveway to the arena, it's Carter-Finley Stadium, and to the arena where the Hurricanes play, I mean, I can be there in 2 hours and change, and you would think it's a lot further than that. And so, yeah, to answer your question, people in Charlotte are rooting for the Hurricanes, but, like, it's not like, you know, people aren't flying car flags and going crazy. You know, when they were in the Stanley Cup Finals, it got a little buzz, just like when the Panthers went to the Super Bowl. I think it had a little buzz in Raleigh, but for whatever reason, I mean, people in Memphis, I don't think, spend a lot of time going crazy over Nashville
100%.
And vice versa.
100%.
Right, and so to me, it's when I lived in Tennessee, that's kind of how I felt. I was like, all right, you know, it's kind of, you know, you kind of have the two different big cities that kind of do their own thing, and you know, wherever the Oilers were going to end up is where they were going to end up.
You know, Ryan, I know you watch.
See, I just dated it again, right? Like all the. So now all the young Titans fans are like, what the hell are you talking about with the Oilers? And they're all getting all good.
That's right, they're Oilers. Ryan, I know you follow college baseball. We were just referencing a great game from the past. SEC baseball, it's interesting. Maybe because early in the season, the crowds were down. You could hear the jawing back and forth from the dugouts. Now, of course, the crowds are growing, and we've had some huge crowds here recently. But, you know, I saw Tony Vitello get thrown out of a game when they played Vanderbilt. There was an exchange between Vitello and the Arkansas coach last weekend. I've watched some Vanderbilt games. People love beating Vanderbilt. That's part of being a top dog, right? You get excited when you beat them. But Florida, man, there were some jawing back and forth between those two teams. They just played Ole Miss. SEC baseball is just, it's really amazing to me. It's so competitive, right? It's so deep. And I don't know what the right word is, but, you know, I don't know if everybody likes the yapping, but certainly you can appreciate the emotions on how and how big each game is.
Yeah, I don't know if y'all heard, but in the SEC, it just means more. That's what they.
This falls into line with that, right?
Right. Yeah, but it's true though, and it's funny because when I travel around the country and they ask me about I'm a college baseball junkie. I wrote a worst selling book about the College World Series years ago, and so I love going to the classic places. When I go to the West Coast, you know, I went to a Long Beach State Cal State Fullerton game. I was so excited to be there. I went to a Cal Stanford baseball game. I was so excited to be there, and it was nice, but I kept waiting on somebody to get mad at somebody. And it didn't happen because, you know, even 100 years ago when I was in college, there was an intensity level to it. So you guys know I was in Nashville a couple weeks ago. I'm working on a big story about – they got a couple pretty good pitchers down there at Vanderbilt right now, and I'm working on a story about those guys. And I hadn't seen Corbs. I hadn't seen Coach Corbs since we were standing on the field in Omaha in 2019 after they won the championship. And he came in, and he knew I was a Tennessee guy. He goes, well, he goes, we had a big series with your alma mater last weekend. I said, yeah. I said, how'd it go? He goes, man. He goes, those fans had a lot to say about my relationship with my wife. And I was like, yeah. But that's just, and he's laughing about it. You know, but it's just there's an intensity level to it. And listen, there are so many teams in the conference that are ranked, and all of these teams are fighting not just – they know they're in the tournament. They're fighting to host a regional and maybe a super regional. And so those numbers are so important, and I think you see the pressure of that. Because you don't really see it with the kids. You see it with the coaches, because I think the pressure is on with those guys right now, and everybody understands that. But, yeah, it's just – It is super, super intense. And hey, that's why they're all really good at it.
We're talking to Ryan McGee of ESPN about a variety of different things, also on the SEC Network. But the Nashville Fairgrounds, we know last week they opened it up for the people to come out and either give their support or give their opposition to what Bristol and SMI is trying to do there. And I know that you know, the big thing is that the racetrack's right there in the middle of a neighborhood. You're worried about the noise. You know, Dale Jr. has laid out a lot of things that Marcus Smith is trying to do. Marcus Smith has laid out a lot of things that they're wanting to do. But what's kind of your view as this saga continues with the Fairgrounds in Nashville?
Well, I mean, I think the racing's coming. And that poor Australian woman who got up there,
I
want to give her a hug and just go, listen, I got bad news. This ain't going away. And it's just, you know, it's funny. When I used to date my now wife, she lived over in that area, and it wasn't quite the cool place that it is now. It hadn't been gentrified yet. And they all just knew, you know, if you rented an apartment in that area, that, you know, listen, the truck series is racing this weekend. So that's just how that's going to be, or late models or whatever. And so, you know, you see this a lot with classic racetracks. I remember I was in Bakersfield, California one time, and it had the exact same thing. All these people were mad. Well, they were mad because the track was quiet for a few years, and they built all these places, and all of a sudden the track woke up. And so, you know, this battle was inevitable, but the reality is that I think that what people are eventually going to figure out is that this is not a bad thing. You know, and you know, if all of a sudden, you know, I live here in Charlotte. We just had the golf tournament at Quail Hollow a couple weeks ago. And at first, you know, for 20 years, they wanted to bring the PGA tournament back to Quail Hollow. And then it came back, and everybody complained. Oh, I can't go to the grocery store. You know, why does the blimp make all this noise hovering over my house? And it kind of went through all that for about 2 years. And then once everybody got used to the routine of it, then it was okay. So, yeah, this battle was always coming, you know. I haven't looked into it in the last week. Next will be the environmentalists, because that's they're the ones that have successfully shut down racetracks. I remember Jessica Lane going crazy when they were going to build a racetrack in New York one time, and so that'll be next. And those battles are fair, and those questions are fair. But the reality is that I think this thing is rolling now to the point that folks are probably if you don't want your windows to rattle. You know, from time to time, then you're probably going to have to move on outside of town.
Yeah. No, I agree. And it's a, you know, people also miss the fact it's a historic landmark. So that protects
it. Yeah, well, and people don't, and you guys know this, a lot of people don't want to put the word historic next to a racetrack. You know,
right.
When they hear racetrack, it's a shirtless, you know, drunk dude and whatever else. And that's sort of fair, too. These are my people. But, you know, all my friends that live in Speedway, Indiana, they were all texting me last week and said, hey, we've had a racetrack here since 1908, and we've managed to make that work.
Yeah. No, and it's worked well for them. I was in Dover this weekend for the race. It was good to be back at a racetrack. And obviously they're getting ready. They had their weekend, and they're getting ready for June here in Nashville. What are kind of some of your thoughts on the Super Speedway and NASCAR is back in the market now? There could be a potential of they could run both tracks at some point in time with the three national series. But I know everybody that I talked to that was at the track was like, oh, yeah, we're coming to Nashville. We all want to be in Nashville. So what are kind of some of your thoughts on race weekend in June?
Well, I think, first of all, it was a super smart move by the Dover folks, you know, to move that date out there. Because that was one of those, you either move that date and survive financially, or you don't move that date and you lose that date. And so it just made a lot of sense. And I'll tell you this, I mentioned being out there a couple of weeks ago. We took off and I'm looking out the window. I'm like, please fly over the track. Please fly over the track. And we flew over the track. And I was so excited because I hadn't seen it in so long, and it looks great. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the last time I flew over it, you could tell it was not occupied. And so what I will say, and I think I've said it to you guys before, and I'll say it to your audience now, I'm a Rockingham, North Carolina kid. That's where I was born. That's where I'll be buried. And I can tell you firsthand, a ticket is a vote.
Yep.
And if you want those races, then you got to show up. Because if you don't, then you have given them the excuse to not race there again. And so if you want racing back at the fairgrounds, then the best thing you could possibly do is show up to the Speedway. And if you want racing at both, then you really need to show up at the Speedway. And if you want racing at all, I say it all the time, a ticket is a vote. I never forget when the Truck Series came back to Rockingham and they had worked so hard to get that place reopened. And I remember the first race, crowd was great. The second race, the moment I hit the parking lot, I said to my wife, I go, they're screwed. Yeah. Because if you don't buy tickets, and I told my cousins and my family this, if you don't buy a ticket, then there's no way they could possibly know that you want it. And so that's my advice is, if race fans, if you want it to stay there, then you need to show up.
So what do you think about this? The report coming out this morning, Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing. He's been offered a driver role and then ownership with Roush Fenway to take over, I guess, reportedly the six car. You know, when I read that this morning, I kind of went, I don't know if I'd leave Penske for that. But I said the same thing about Tony Stewart when he left Gibbs to form Stewart Haas, and we see how that's turned out.
Well, this is the future of how this is going to work. Which is a stake in the race team is going to be what's going to be offered. Or the ability to, look at the Joe Gibbs, Denny Hamlin situation. Letting your guy start a business on the side, a Cup Series team that he co-owns with Michael Jordan. Ultimately that's good for business. He's getting all his gear from Joe Gibbs Racing. And so, I think this is the future of what these contracts are going to look like. And I know Brad well enough to know he's always trying to think five steps ahead. Denny's the same way. And so these guys know they're closer to the end of their career than they are to the beginning of their career. And so, yeah, the performance hasn't been there for Roush Fenway, hasn't been there for a while. But if you're Brad and you're thinking about, all right, what can I do to make sure that I'm still involved in the sport? What can I do to make sure that I'm in the best financial position I can be in for 10, 15, 20 years from now? Whether he takes it or not, he has to look at it. And so I think this is what we're going to see going forward, especially with Hall of Fame veteran guys who've won championships, which is what Brad Keselowski is. And so if you want to poach a driver, if you want to get him to come over to your place, you got to offer him something that where he is currently isn't going to do it. And this is certainly that opportunity. Whether he takes it, I don't know. But I think that, this is what we're going to start seeing more and more and more going into the future.
Ryan, as we wrap this up, what's Tim Tebow going to be doing this fall?
Well, as a proud cast member of SEC Nation, and I have been since the beginning, that's a great question. but I know he is going to be a Jacksonville Jaguar to some extent. Whether that's just camp, whether that's just workouts, whether it's whatever. He's giving it a shot, and I've said this before. The people who criticize Tim Tebow for playing baseball or for, working out with the Jacksonville Jaguars, I just laugh. Because guess what? If the Jaguars called you, and I'm saying you as in anyone who can hear me right now, your butt would show up and work out. And if the New York Mets called and said, we'd like to offer you a tryout, then they would call you. I know this for a fact about the Tebow situation. He did not call them. They called him. And so if the team calls and says work out, listen, I am old and I would blow both my hamstrings out the first time I try to run a 40-yard dash. But if the Jags called, I would be on an airplane right now.
Yeah. Hey, good stuff as always. We appreciate the visits. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Y'all too. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Ryan McGee. Always good to talk to him from ESPN. We'll come back, give you a chance to win some tickets to that race in June to close out the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next. Special thanks to Ryan McGee. Always good to chat with him. You better be calling right now. You just heard that promo. Call in on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The number 615-737-1025, 737-1025. A pair of tickets to the Tennessee Lottery 250, the Xfinity race, on Saturday, June 19th at the Nashville Super Speedway. The person who can call in to Elijah and give him the correct answer is going to win those tickets. And the question is, the first ever race, which Willie, we were out there. First ever race, broadcasting live. It was an all-day affair, the Pepsi 300 in 2001. The first ever race, which was in it, you know, at the time, was it Busch? The yep. Busch Series? It was an Xfinity. So I guess it was at the time it was the Busch Series. Who won the first ever race at the Nashville Super Speedway, the Pepsi 300? Is it A, David Green? Is it B, Greg Biffle? Is it C, Michael Waltrip? Is it D, Carl Edwards? Who won the first ever race, the Pepsi 300 in 2001 at the Nashville Super Speedway? Was it A, David Green? B, Greg Biffle? C, Michael Waltrip? D, Carl Edwards? If you can correctly guess that to Elijah, you will win tickets to that Xfinity race on that Saturday, June 19th. That's going to be a heck of a weekend.
Wasn't David Green quarterback in Georgia back then?
No, David Green is somebody that Green family, they did a lot of racing. Okay. He was a great guy from Kentucky, and we used to interview him a lot over the years. Great guy.
He raced.
I am very excited to tell you that I know the answer. I do remember the answer.
You do remember the answer?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
I got this. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I had it before you gave the choices.
Really?
I too know the answer.
See, I gave the choices. I wasn't sure if this was gettable without cheating. You know, I mean, there's got to be a way to cheat. So there always is. If you have the internet, there's got to be a way.
Right, but that takes time. And if you know the answer, boom, you're already on the digits and you got this.
Do we have a winner?
I think
we do have a winner.
Okay, that did not take long. Did not take long. So, Willie, I'm going to hear you. Who's the correct answer?
I was there. It was Greg Biffle.
The Biff.
Look at you. Look at you. Boom. Greg Biffle.
Carl Edwards.
Honestly, that was a really exciting weekend. We interviewed Jimmy Johnson.
Interviewed anybody and everybody.
He would have raced there. Yep. That would have been his only year racing there. Yep. In the 92 Excedrin car.
I mean, I think we did like a 3 or 4 hour show out there. It was a big to-do. And by the way, all those drivers all won at the Nashville Super Speedway.
Yes.
They all won the Pepsi 300.
Carl Edwards won 5 times in the Xfinity Series, 1 time in the Truck Series. He owned that track.
I'll give you another great story.
He liked the concrete surface for sure. Mm-hmm. Concrete Carl.
Yep.
I'll give you another great story from our adventures at that racetrack back in the day, Darren. We did a pre-show one time, our buddy Norm Parton, and Terry Bradshaw came over. He was part of the show leading up to the race coverage.
Yes.
So I was there. I certainly wasn't weighing in a whole lot about the race, but I was, you know, just having fun talking. And the Marines were there, and they had a pull-up bar. And we had a huge crowd. A huge crowd.
Monster crowd.
Getting ready to go in. And the Marines are just whipping up the pull-ups, just boom, boom, boom. And they're like, who wants to come out now? Who wants to do it? You know, and Norm and Terry are like, Willie, go on down there. Show them how many pull-ups you can do. I was like, all right. So, you know, I was younger. You know, I did go into the weight room, but I was certainly not Marine level. So I did about 6 pull-ups, right? And the crowd's going crazy. 1, 2. But, of course, you know how it gets, like, each one gets a little tougher, and then you're getting to the exhaustion. The crowd is cheering me on, and I got like the 7th one just barely, and then I collapsed off the thing. Everybody's clapping and cheering and laughing at me. And Terry Bradshaw turns to Norm Parton, and he says, if you had $1 million to give Willie if he got the 8th pull-up, he wouldn't have been able to do it. And everybody just started busting out laughing. It was a great story.
I believe
I gave it my all.
I'm not sure that
for Tennessee
either one of us could have done more than 7. So I'm pretty sure you did. I think at that point I missed that because I don't remember. I mean, I remember what you're talking because I was listening, but I think they had shipped me into the infield. And if you remember, I was doing reports from like pit row of, you know, with like the tire changer. So I was running that.
You could talk to anybody.
Because you have to remember, Chase, we were new. You know, this was like hockey coming here. It was just that all this stuff was new to us. I mean, that's when I learned that they glued the lug nuts on. I mean, I didn't know any of this stuff. Like, they let me do that to the actual tires. Like,
oh, yeah.
I learned a whole lot of stuff. because they had shipped me into the infield and given me access to anything and everything, and they would just pop in from time to time, and I would do a report on, you know, the tires or what have you.
Speaking of.
I do remember listening to that, but, Willie, I did not get to actually see that. I do remember that moment, though.
Are you looking at the camera, looking at Zoom right now?
I am.
I'm holding up three lug nuts that I brought back from Dover, and they still have the glue on them. So.
Nice. Whose tire?
Bowman, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I picked these up outside of Bowman's pit.
All right. Very good. All right, we'll come back. We will talk to Terry Crisp to begin the final hour of Darren, Donnie, and Chase. We'll also announce our winner, and they're going to go to the Nashville Super Speedway in June. We'll do all that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.